Welcome to the deep dive. You've sent us some really interesting stuff this time.
Yeah, well, quite a mix.
We've got this briefing note from Cadbury and Jones, and it pulls from reports by the World Economic Forum, PEC, Civitas, plus some really good real-world examples. UNSW, Chop Value.
Detroit Manufacturing Systems, too. It's a good spread.
So let's jump in. We're going deep on microfactories today, looking at how these, well, smaller, more nimble manufacturing setups, it could really spark some economic change.
And maybe offer a more sustainable way to make things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially for places with that industrial history, you know, areas like Wales that have seen decline.
Right.
So our mission for this deep dive,
yeah,
really get under the hood of microfactories. What are they? Why are people talking about them so much? And what could they actually do for somewhere like Wales?
Sounds good. And it's important, I think, to say up front, these aren't just miniature versions of old factories.
Okay.
No, it's more like rethinking manufacturing from the ground up.
Wow.
They're small to medium, yeah, but the key is they're modular. And they're packed with tech.
Like AI, robotics.
AI, robotics, IoT, connecting everything up. It's not just basic automation. Think AI maybe predicting when a machine needs maintenance before it breaks down.
So minimizing that downtime you mentioned earlier.
Precisely. And robots working, you know, alongside people more collaboratively.
Yeah.
Plus the Internet of Things, pulling in data in real time to optimize how things run.
Okay. Okay. So let's unpack the benefits. The note had some pretty impressive numbers. What are the main advantages we should focus on?
Well, the sources point to a few big ones. First up is efficiency and productivity. Big jumps there.
How big?
The briefing note, pulling from the World Economic Forum, talks about like 15 to 30% productivity gains.
That's substantial.
Yeah. And reducing downtime by potentially up to 50% compared to traditional plans. That's mainly down to the smart automation and, you know, the more streamlined processes you get in these smaller units.
A 50% cut in downtime is huge for any manufacturer. And a modular thing you mentioned,
yeah,
is that an advantage?
Ah, the modularity. It's a game changer for flexibility. The PEC report really stresses this. It means you can reconfigure production lines quickly.
So if the market shifts or you need to do custom orders.
Exactly. Microfactories can pivot way faster. They aren't these giant fixed setups needing massive retooling. It's more like building blocks. You can add, remove, rearrange modules as needed. That adaptability is key.
Makes sense. You can react quicker. Now, sustainability seemed like a really big theme, too. What about the environmental side?
Yeah, the environmental pluses look really compelling. The World Economic Forum figure suggests up to 80% less energy use.
80%. Yeah.
And 90% less water, maybe 50% fewer chemicals compared to the old way.
Okay, those are seriously big reductions.
They are. And if you think about global sustainability goals, this model fits right in. It's not just saving on the energy bill. It changes the whole infrastructure needed.
Yeah.
You could potentially have localized, maybe even off-grid energy. Makes manufacturing much more resilient, too.
All right, less vulnerable to energy price shocks. It paints a picture of, well, a much cleaner way of making things.
Definitely more resource efficient.
Okay, so the theory sounds good. The briefing note had those real world examples. Let's dig into those. First was UNSW in Australia.
Yes, the University of New South Wales. What's really interesting there is their focus, turning waste into valuable stuff, specifically e-waste and plastics.
Ah, so recycling, but making high-value materials out of it.
Exactly. So it's not just efficient manufacturing. It's actively building a circular economy, taking waste, something we have too much of, and finding economic and environmental value in it.
That's clever. Tackling e-waste is a massive challenge.
Okay.
Then there's Chop Value. Canada, right? Turning old chopsticks into things.
Yeah, Chop Value. It's a great example of the network idea. They have over 80 of these little microfactories.
80? Across different countries?
9 countries, including the UK. And get this. They've saved over 190 million chopsticks from landfill.
190 million? That's staggering.
Isn't it? And they turn them into engineered products, furniture, homewares. So you've got sustainable sourcing the waste chopsticks, combined with this decentralized network.
Which means local job. Right?
Local jobs, yeah. And a much smaller carbon footprint. You're not shipping materials and products vast distances. It's localized circular manufacturing in action.
Really brings the concept to life. Taking something disposable and making it valuable locally.
Okay, and the last one, Detroit Manufacturing Systems. Automotive sector.
Yeah, DMS. They're interesting because they show this isn't just for niche products. They scaled up within the auto industry, a really traditional sector.
How big did they get?
Started small in 2012, now employ nearly 1,500 people making interior parts for cars.
1,500 jobs. from a small startup.
Right. So it really underlines the potential for, you know, economic revitalization, bringing good manufacturing jobs back to areas that might have struggled. It shows it can work on a meaningful scale. Those examples really show the range, don't they? Waste, consumer goods, automotive.
Okay, but the briefing note mentioned a common question. What about economies of scale? Don't you lose that by going small?
That's the classic argument, isn't it? Bigger is cheaper. But the sources argue that modern automation and that modular design really challenge that idea now.
How so?
Because these places can be highly automated, they can hit high efficiency levels, even without massive scale. Sure. Plus their agility, their ability to serve niche markets or do custom work quickly, that can actually make them more viable economically in certain areas. The World Economic Forum goes into this.
So tech and flexibility kind of make up for the lack of sheer size. That's important. Okay, let's pivot to whales then, since the note focused there. What are the big opportunities?
Well, if you look at whales, especially those areas with the industrial past, the potential seems pretty significant.
Like using old industrial sites? Exactly. Places like Merthyr Tydfil, Ebbw Vale. They often have vacant sites that could be perfect for these modern, smaller factories. And the note mentions how UK fashion microclusters are already working well.
Fashion. How does that relate?
It shows how small, local firms collaborating can boost productivity and innovation. Microfactories could build on that idea in Wales, but across different sectors, using local skills, local infrastructure, but in a new way.
Right. Updating the approach. And what of the Industry 4.0 angle? Germany's big on that, right?
Very big. Their Industry 4.0 strategy shows how digital tech boosts efficiency for everyone, big and small. For Wales, adopting similar tech in microfactories could make them really competitive globally.
Attract investment, create those high-tech jobs.
Precisely. It's about future-proofing manufacturing there. Industry 4.0, you know, it's about using data, connectivity, smart integrated manufacturing. In a microfactory, that means sensors feeding back data, AI maybe optimizing schedules, predicting maintenance.
Okay. But what about the people needed to run all this, the skills?
Ah, crucial point. Skills development. The note really pushes for partnerships between these new factories and local colleges, universities in Wales.
To create training programs.
Exactly. Tailored apprenticeships, upskilling programs, making sure the local workforce has the skills for these advanced setups. The fashion clusters did this well, and the Civitas report also stressed creating these skills pipelines.
So industry and education working hand in hand. It sounds like this whole approach fits quite well with what the Welsh government wants to achieve.
It really does. Yeah, it ticks a lot of boxes. Economic resilience, because you're diversifying. It supports the foundational economy, local high-value jobs. And importantly, it aligns with their Well-Being of Future Generations Act.
Because of the sustainability aspect.
Right. Minimizing environmental impact is built in. The note even suggests specific sectors for Wales, like advanced composites, maybe electric vehicle components, eco-friendly packaging, things that play to existing strengths but are also forward-looking.
So nurturing new, innovative industries, not just trying to replicate the past. Okay, the briefing note laid out some concrete recommendations for Wales. Let's run through those. First was strategic site identification.
Yeah, basically, be smart about where you put these. Target those former industrial sites and communities hit by deindustrialization, like we mentioned, but don't just pick empty buildings.
Do your homework first.
Right. Assess the needs. What manufacturing sectors actually fit the local resources, the skills that are already there or could be developed? Could an old textile area become a hub for advanced textiles, for example?
Makes sense. Leverage what you've got. Second point, community and stakeholder engagement. Sounds vital.
Absolutely critical. You need local people on board. You need anchor institutions, universities, maybe hospitals involved, regional government support too. It has to be a collaborative effort, an ecosystem really.
Yeah.
Making sure there's local buy-in and maybe even local demand for what's being made.
Okay. Then innovation and skills infrastructure. We touched on that.
Mm-hmm. We did, but the note stresses strengthening that industry academia link, using facilities like AMRC Simru for R&D and Industry 4.0 tech. And really building those strong apprenticeship pipelines. It's about keeping both the innovation and the talent flowing.
Got it. Fourth recommendation, financial incentives and easier support.
Yeah, the practical stuff. Government and financial bodies need to make it easier. Targeted grants, maybe low interest loans, cutting through red tape to set these up.
Like using the Development Bank of Wales.
Exactly. The note mentions them, echoing Civitas. Making it financially viable, especially early on, is key.
Makes sense. Fifth point.
Yeah.
Collaborative marketing. a Made in Wales brand.
I quite like that idea. They mentioned the Made in Britain network as a model. A Made in Wales brand could really help promote products from all these different microfactories together, boost visibility, build some regional pride around this new manufacturing push.
Yeah, create a shared identity. And the final recommendation brings us back to sustainability.
Right, sustainability and the circular economy, which, as we said, is kind of a core strength here. The recommendation is to actively encourage and incentivize circular practices designing for reuse, recycling materials, minimizing waste. It ties straight back to that Well-Being of Future Generations Act. It's not just growth, it's responsible, sustainable growth.
Okay, so pulling it all together, the briefing note really paints microfactories as a potentially powerful model, scalable, sustainable. Especially for places like Wales looking to revitalize after industrial decline.
Yeah, it's a mix of advanced tech, being green, and focusing on local needs and skills.
It feels like a real shift from the old massive factory model.
I think it is. A move towards something more distributed, more agile, and, well, more conscious of its impact.
This has been really fascinating, looking at all these examples, thinking about Wales. It does make you wonder, doesn't it? What other maybe overlooked resources or niche areas in your own community could, you know, be kickstarted with a microfactory approach? Could we build new local economies around being resourceful, community-led manufacturing? Definitely some food for thought. Thanks for joining me for this deep dive.